From WIPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. The opportunity to tell one's story can be empowering, especially for those who think they don't have a voice or believe others aren't interested in what they have to say. We meet Johns Hopkins film student Amelia Voos, along with illustrator and educator Jonathan Scott Fuqua. They've been working with 8th grade students at Morrill Park Middle School to teach them the skills of telling their personal stories through video.
Because a lot of studies have recently come out saying that if you know your history, you know your present, and you understand where you're going to go in your future much better.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The opportunity to tell one's story can be empowering, especially for those who don't think they have a voice or believe others aren't interested in what they have to say. Our guests today have been working with 8th grade students at Morrill Park Middle School to teach them the skills of telling their personal stories through video. The project is sponsored by the Jewish Museum of Maryland, where the videos will be screened at the event Morrill Park Projected next Thursday, March 22nd. Later in the show, we'll meet the Johns Hopkins film student who's been shepherding the pupils through the process. With us now is Jonathan Scott Fuqua, who has spearheaded the project. Fuqua is an award-winning author of young adult books, and he's a founder of the Baltimore Academy of Illustration. We talked with him about that last fall. Welcome back to On the Record, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about the Morrill Park neighborhood where the students live. Where is it and what's it like?
It's a unique neighborhood. It's located in southwest Baltimore. I really didn't know that it existed or where it was before the project began. It was recommended to us by somebody at the Jewish Museum of Maryland. They're helping kind of create and fund the project. So when I first went there, I really didn't know what to expect. It's very different from most Baltimore neighborhoods. It's probably white working class more than most currently. It's really teetering on the brink of success and to some extent, demise, really.
Teetering? In what way? Teetering?
Well, what you have is a very diverse group of individuals who live there. Some people are very successful and doing very well and choose to live in Morrill Park. They have a history in that community and that sort of thing. You also have other people just moving in. You have people moving in from other parts of Baltimore, people moving in from other states, and people moving in from other countries. So it's getting a real influx of individuals. And with that influx, you know, there are good and bad things occurring within the community.
Tell me more about that.
The community definitely has a drug problem. It's most evident when you go up on Washington Boulevard, because Washington Boulevard bisects the community. If you walk up there, what you'll notice is that there are people hanging out on stoops and steps, even on cold days. I mean, freezing cold days. You'll pass by people in T-shirts that are shivering there, kind of looking at you. And you realize that there are a lot of people suffering on that road. There are a lot of bars and shut down buildings. It's pretty bleak along the boulevard. And everyone within the communities and some very nice parts of the communities refers to the boulevard as a place that nobody wants their kids to go. Not only that, when we were walking on the boulevard, I think this was very emblematic of Morrill Park, we came across a small pocket park overlooking the railroad tracks and right off Washington Boulevard. And in that park are a bunch of benches, and we're walking around looking at the benches, and on the ground beside one of the benches are a bunch of just crayons sitting there scattered around the ground. So it would be a typical park where kids would play and that sort of thing. But mixed in amongst those crayons were a bunch of drug caps. And I think that is totally emblematic of the boulevard there, in that, you know, they do have kids. They're trying to watch their kids. They're trying to be as good as they can in regards to being a parent. And some of the people along the boulevard are just not making it. Now, it's a different place than the communities. The communities themselves are much healthier. But I would say this, that those individuals along the boulevard do come from the communities. It is changing.
Where did the idea for this project come from?
Well, it's funny. I like to do a lot of work with museums around town. Many years ago, I worked as the special projects coordinator at the Baltimore City Life Museums. And after that, I worked at the Historical Society and various places like that. And I've kept in touch with all my museum contacts. And I really love to do kind of explorations in history around the area. And so I go into various museums once or twice a year and discuss various ideas for projects. They wanted to do something.
The Jewish Museum. Apparently.
The Jewish Museum did. They wanted to do something in which they actually really examined the way in which people view their history and their past. In kind of the Jewish culture and faith, it's very important to have a very strong sense of your history and your past. And they wanted to look at communities and have those individuals within those communities and those schools in those communities review their own history. Because a lot of studies have recently come out saying that if you know your history, you know your present and you understand where you're going to go in your future much better. Now, that's not a precise formula, obviously, but they did want to get out there and actually explore that concept. So I went in with about 6 or 7 ideas for them, and we sat down, and all of them were, I guess, shot down pretty quickly. And then at the end of this whole thing, I came up with this strange idea to start getting these kids to film their own histories. And not only do that, but while they were filming their own histories, we would also create a movie, a secondary movie, in which we watched them learn how to tell stories, learn how to tell their stories, and really examine their place in the world. And we would do it with a much more critical eye. We would also tell the history of Moral Park. We would follow some kids home and talk to their parents. We would do all sorts of things that would actually give us a greater depth and idea as to how these people live and how they got there and where they hope to go in the future. And one of the things that struck me is this has got to be one of the most altruistic projects that any museum could possibly do. They're not examining the Jewish story. They're not examining the history of Jewish people within this community. When I spoke to Marvin Pinkert, the head of the Jewish Museum, about why they were doing this, he said, "We are living our religion," and I think they really are.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with artist and instructor Jonathan Scott Fuqua about teaching storytelling and video production to 8th graders in the Moral Park neighborhood of West Baltimore. They're getting ready for a screening at the Jewish Museum. How many kids are participating?
So right now we have about 30 kids participating. And those kids are very excited. It's amazing. I've frequently asked the kids near the end of this project, I've been asking the kids, how many of you have really enjoyed what we're doing? And most every single one of them raises their hand. They're very excited to be telling their story and to get this opportunity. That's really different in that when we started this project, I don't think too many of them were very excited at all. In fact, I think they didn't believe that we would stick with them. Meaning, I think they thought we would come in, introduce ourselves, show up near the end of the project, and grab what they were working on and leave. I don't think that they thought we'd be there long term, and we have been there long term. We've been there so that when I come in the door, they say, "Hey, Mr. Scott, how are you? Good to see you." They run up to me and talk to me about their films and what they're doing. It's pretty amazing. Now, these are the same kids that I was told had no stories. That's part of what inspired this entire project. One of the individuals at the Jewish Museum of Maryland was talking to a teacher in that school, and that teacher said, "You know you like stories, but my kids don't have stories." And that's what made her want to examine this concept of story as it relates to kids kind of feeling more at peace with where they are and how they came to live in that place.
So that's a big idea, but what skills are the kids learning?
There's technical skills and then there are other skills. And so what they've been learning is pretty straightforward. A lot of these kids actually didn't know what a story was when we came in the door. A story seems like a very simple thing, but it has a beginning, middle, and an end. It has rising action. It should be gripping. It should be short and concise. And it should, like I said, have this kind of climax to it. It should rise to a moment. And these kids didn't know that. So when we talked about stories to them, they were somewhat befuddled at first, and we had to really go through precisely what a story was. And they came to realize very, very quickly that way that, in fact, they did have stories, and they did have quite a bit to say. And that's how we launched this whole project originally, telling them and showing them what a story was, which seems so human, but in fact, it's not obvious to everyone.
Are you including families of the students in the documentary?
So we've gone home with three children so far. And when I say that, we've gone home, we talked to their parents, we've been in their house, we've followed them around their house, we've talked to their grandparents if they're there. We've had all these various conversations with people who matter to them. We're going to be sitting down with one more family before this all kind of comes to conclusion. It's pretty amazing because they all come from such diverse and unique backgrounds. Every child is different, and every child is struggling with a unique issue in this circumstance.
Are there plans to replicate this project in other schools?
We have a lot of plans in regards to replicating this project. We really do. We would love to do this over and over again and watch it grow and change. One of the things that we've dealt with this year is, you know, this being the first time it's ever been run, we've really learned an enormous amount, and now we can apply that knowledge to future projects. You know, we didn't know what we were doing at first. So we can see now what we did right and what we did wrong, where our expectations were too high or too low. And I think that in the future, it will just get stronger and stronger, and our ability to kind of have these kids tell their own story will really multiply. It'll be quite amazing to see how it looks in, say, 5 years.
Jonathan Scott Fuqua has been working since last fall with eighth grade students at the Morrill Park Middle School, teaching them about storytelling and video production. After the break, we'll be joined by Fuqua's collaborator, a Johns Hopkins University film student, and we'll hear some clips from the kids' films. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today with illustrator and instructor Jonathan Scott Fuqua about a collection of personal documentaries made by eighth graders in the Morrill Park neighborhood of West Baltimore. The Jewish Museum of Maryland is sponsoring the project. And joining the conversation now is Amelia Voos, a Johns Hopkins University film student who's been working closely with the students. Welcome to On the Record, Amelia.
Thank you for having me.
You've been teaching students video production. How are these videos different than the typical social media post that many teens this age are familiar with?
I think the primary difference is that they involve editing. It's not just taking a video just on their phone and then uploading it directly to whatever social media they're using. They're taking all of the films and interviews and B-roll, walks around their house, walks around their neighborhood, and putting them all...
Let me interrupt. B-roll.
Yes. So B-roll is essentially... when you're taking interviews of people and you decide you're getting bored of looking at just their face and you want to try to connect a little bit more with the subject material they're talking about. So that's when videos of their families, their homes, their communities come into play.
So it's additional
footage and pictures that you can overlay over the audio of interviews.
Okay. So you were explaining what the students are learning.
So most of what they're learning is how to take all of those pieces of footage that they have and apply them to the idea of telling a story, which is a lot of what Scott's been dealing with. So after he taught them a little bit about what a story actually is, it was my job to come in and kind of teach them how to apply that to a film and to a short piece. So they took all of these clips that they had accrued and they dumped them into iMovie. And I taught them a lot about cutting and what it means to make a story shorter than you think it needs to be, and how to create a piece of themselves to give to other people.
These films that they're making include interviews?
Mm-hmm.
So interviewing technique is part of what you're teaching?
Yes. So Scott started off initially teaching them a little bit about how to ask interviews. He had a bit of an oral history background. And then I came in and answered all of the follow-up questions that they had after Scott. And
they had a lot of follow-up questions. Yes. Well, look, I've known Amelia since she was first born, and I always knew that she would one day overshadow me, and that's fine. I can take it. She's a brilliant young woman, and that's why I asked her into the project.
So how often do you work with students, Amelia?
So in the beginning of the project, in the first half of the year, it was probably about twice a month that we were going in, and now in the second half of the project, we're there at least every week. A couple times I've been in twice a week. So it's a really exciting time to get to know the
really
kids.
Well, you're really sort of in the home stretch. How's it going?
It's going really well. So all of the projects are coming together, and we have really good collection of 30 pieces that the kids have been so excited over, and they're coming together in the next week or so.
Let's play a clip from one of the students.
My name is Ariana Kittleson, and I'm going to be telling you of the story how my dad left my life. And this affected me so bad because that's my dad, and now he's not even in my life anymore. And it really affected me seeing my mom struggle so much and go through all of that, and it hurt so bad.
Tell me a bit about Ariana.
So Ariana is one of the most excited and dedicated students on this project. And she has been dealing with the difficult subject matter of her father leaving her fairly early on in life and trying to reconnect and then not being able to reconnect. And she, quite frankly, has handled it like a champ. The way she has approached the entire editing process and the storytelling process has been the methodology of a veteran. She doesn't have necessarily all of the skills that repeatedly telling a story might offer someone, but she has the ability to tell the story exactly how she wants to tell it. And it's very conversational, and it means so very much to her, and she makes it mean so very much to everyone else who hears it.
How did the kids decide what stories they wanted to tell?
When we sat down with these kids and we talked to them about what a story was, there was a misconception that a lot of these kids felt like a story was, in fact, a tragedy. So a lot of these kids originally selected tragic moments in their life to discuss and talk about. And we had to go back and refine this idea, this concept of what story is, because it's not always tragedy. Beautiful, simple, elegant stories are just as good as any tragic moment in their life. So what you will find throughout this is some very jarring stories. You will also find some really wonderful, enlightening stories about success and overcoming really bleak odds at times or difficult moments. So, you know, what we're looking at in Ariana's piece is just a sample of what a lot of these kids have dealt with in different ways, meaning some of their fathers are in jail. Some of their fathers have just simply disappeared, mothers too. Some of them live with their sisters. It is an amazing phenomenon to see what a lot of these kids have overcome. But not every story is at all tragic. There are some really wonderful, enlightening pieces.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Jonathan Scott Fuqua and Amelia Vuce about Morrill Park Projected, a collection of personal documentaries by students from Morrill Park Middle School. Here's a clip from another student. This one has been slightly edited for time.
My name is Aruba Nadeem. I came to America in 2015 from Pakistan. At first, it was really hard for me to adjust to the American culture because everything was really different than how it is in Pakistan, like foods and everything. So it was like a cultural shock for me. And I was really nervous to talk to people, and I even sometimes I couldn't even ask teacher a question. So I had to come home and search it up on Google, which was hard sometimes.
Well, what was it like working with Aruba?
Amazing. She is one of the brightest people I have ever met in my life, and perhaps one of the most stalwart. She came here very little over a year ago, and experienced an entirely different life than the life she had at home. And not only has she overcome that, she's thriving in her new community, and she's thriving in this idea of telling stories. And even when she's working on other projects for other teachers and working in History Day competitions and things like that, she has this really remarkable ability to shine through in everything that she's worked on.
It's funny, when you talk to Aruba at school, you think this woman, you know, this young woman must have this amazing home in this nice little place somewhere set aside in Morrill Park. And when we arrived at her home, it was in Southwest Baltimore. And it was between, I guess, three or four burned out buildings around it. And theirs was the only one with the light on. And we came inside, and it was an oasis in this house. The parents were incredibly excited to have us. She was excited to have us. They were just electrified by the process of what we were doing and everything else. Aruba is an outstanding individual, and she has dreams, enormous dreams. And certainly looking at her past and looking at her present and then kind of extrapolating that into the future, I think this has been nothing but good for her.
Tell me about some of the other films.
So some of the other pieces are, as Scott mentioned before, they can be a little bit bittersweet at times, and other times they can be really beautiful little pieces of kids' lives. So there's one kid, Austin, his piece is about how his grandmother walked to work a couple blocks away from her house every day in Morrill Park for years and years and got tired of all the litter and got tired of how gross it looked. So every day on her way to and from work, she would just pick up all of this litter and clean up the three or four blocks on the way to work. And now that she's not working, there are a couple people who have kind of taken up that role and who are cleaning up that small area. So even if it can't affect change over the whole community that is lasting and forever, she can do what she can to help her community. And that's the story that he's telling, and it's an incredibly beautiful one, I think.
Then there's Joe. Joe is this funny little guy, very skinny. He sits at the front of the class. He's been very, very excited about this process from the very start. And he really didn't know what to tell anyone. He didn't know what kind of story to tell at all. And in the end, he's told the story about his mentor. He ran into a man one day who was working in a garage in his neighborhood. And Joe seemed very fascinated by the cars that the man was working on, and Joe hung out there, and eventually the guy hired Joe to work at this garage with him. And Joe one day asked him, why did you hire me and not everyone else? Because there were other kids hanging around. He said to Joe, because you seemed interested. You seemed like you cared. And Joe was just taken aback by that. And this is a little kid who doesn't, you know, at first glance you would think, well, this, he couldn't care like that. But in fact, he does. He's deeply motivated to be at this garage, and he so respects this man who gave him a job that he's telling the story about how he got this job and how he's maintained this job.
What can visitors expect at the event at the Jewish Museum?
I think they'll be transported. I think they'll also be really surprised at the difficult life a lot of these kids lead. It'll be both wonderful, but it will also be surprising. This is not the world of, you know, beautiful Baltimore. This is the world of true, gritty Baltimore, at times at its worst and at times at its best. And it is not a platitude in any way, shape, or form. This is very straightforward. These kids are dealing with a lot every moment of their lives. And when they can see something that's beautiful, it is more amazing than if you or I saw something beautiful. It's just startling.
So the Morrill Park projected event is focused on the kids' film. Your documentary about them making their documentaries will screen when?
It will screen in June. So we're very excited about that. We've been going through talking about, like I said, talking with the parents of these kids, walking around the community and filming. We're getting historical photographs, and we're soliciting people within Morrill Park for images that they have, you know, privately in their collections. So we're talking, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, Morrill Park. It should be amazing.
The whole project sounds amazing. Thanks for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you. We so appreciate it.
Jonathan Scott Fuqua and Amelia Voos have been working with students from Morrill Park Middle School to create personal documentaries. The collection is called Morrill Park Projected. Its premiere screening will take place next Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Jewish Museum of Maryland. Information about the event is at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.